Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Yeah, once again, our moment of not talking happened at the same spot it always does. Instead of happening on number three, the Bridges, we waited till number four. We were sitting at a cool one under, and I just needed you from the gold tees to hit something onto the front of the green and maybe just protect the bogey. I think you were in your pocket as I was tapping in for a smooth five.
So I should say this.
172-yard par three.
Here is the thing that is important. Whenever Michael needed me most, I failed.
But you're aware of that.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I went to play golf yesterday morning, and Peter Hicks was there, and he said, I listened to that. It was so sad.
Yeah.
It was so sad.
It made me rethink my association with the game I love.
It's all true. I failed in every opportunity that I had, and I always hit after Michael, and all I had to do was hit the ball straight once or twice, and I couldn't do it. Yesterday
the worst was when we were walking down the fairway when you try and cheer me up. And I just want to be by myself right now, walking off into the trees.
Here we go. This is from Steve Fishner in Kipps Bay, New York. Kipps Bay is in the 30s on the east side, right? That's where Kipps Bay is.
Movie theater.
Dear Tony, I was going to write about the time I sat next to retired Supreme Court Justice Sandra Day O'Connor on a morning Geneva to JFK flight while she and I chatted and she drank wine, but something more important happened this morning. My wife Reva and I, both proud graduates of George Washington University, were in a super long and numbingly inefficient security line at Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris when I heard an incredibly familiar voice say, I just hate inefficiency. Calling upon my usually useless talent for identifying voices, I surmised that it was a longtime regular on my most favorite podcast. Since it was the day after the men's final at the Paris Open, I felt confident enough to ask, excuse me, are you Liz Clark? After a long pause, she graciously confirmed that indeed it was her. Forget about the Eiffel Tower. Meeting Liz was the highlight of my trip to Paris. Liz said she'd tell you I loved your work for many years, but I'm sending this email in case she forgot. You talked to Liz about this. She told you this story, right?
Yes. Yeah. It's just great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So I have to tell her that we got an email from the bloke she spoke with.
This is like getting the email from Gary Bettman's son.
Right. Exactly.
Confirming that he caddied for me at Alpine.
Exactly.
Yeah, where the first three holes are very, very hard. Greg Garcia writes, this is in support of the kid. Dear Tony, DeerToni. I am writing you to discuss one of your YOURE listeners, Eli Cruikshank. At first, I thought it was amusing that you poked fun at the typos and misspellings where he spells miss with four S's in his recent email requesting to be a guest on the podcast. But then, as the other littles piled on and wrote in their T-H-E-Y-R-E, fancy good proofread emails and song parodies, P-A-R-O-T-E-E-S, I started to feel bad for young Eli and how quickly he is being discounted. May I remind you of another, and the A and the N are separated, another young kid who darkened your YOURE door in his early 20s, spelled wrong, wearing shorts in the winter, breathing from the mouth, and stinking of booze on a Wednesday, not even close to Wednesday morning. A graduate of Frostburg with capitals on F and the R, State University, who didn't know the difference between your and your. I'm talking about me, in case you aren't picking up what I'm putting down. Your pal, Greg Garcia from Team Cruikshank. It's brilliant. Greg is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. As we know, it's brilliant.
Love, Greg.
And then I got a very nice note from Peter Sonnenschein. He was the person who Len Rubin sort of guided to us.
With a picture.
Who did the picture, the portrait of me. And he writes, thanks so much for the shout out of the painting I did of you. This is Peter Sonnenschein. I'm good friends with Len Rubin. He gave me your email. First things first, I love you and Mike Wilbon talking about sports. I watch you guys every night at 5:30 while getting ready for dinner. And he has this disorder called familial dysautonomia, which is called FD, which affects the autonomic nervous system that can easily go out of control. Doctors never expect you to live with FD to my ripe old age of 37, and we showed them. My body is unstable. I have numerous medical problems, and I've discovered that drawing and painting can really take my mind off worrying about these problems. I can work for hours, even though I am legally blind. Each of us FDers have to find ways to create stability. This is obviously heartwarming, and I'm so grateful that he listens.
Yes.
And so kind of him to send a picture and all of that. And it's just really nice. And he's got a website with paintings, in case you want to look at it. PeterSonnenschein.com. PeterSonnenschein.com. So thank you for all of that. And I hope people like the work. What should we start with today? The Angels can't win. They didn't even win last night after they fired Joe Maddon.
Yeah, and they were up,
It's 13 in a row.
Yeah.
They fired, you know, I wrote Happy Trails the other day for yesterday's show. It had to be changed at 3 o'clock because he got fired. But the Happy Trails was to Mike Trout's 0 for 26 because he led off, or his first at-bat against Boston in the game they lost 1-0 was a hard single off Michael Wacha. Okay. And I wrote at the end of it, guys like Mike Trout are allowed to play their way out of slumps. Do you think the same will happen with Joe Maddon? And 2 hours later, Kelleher calls me and said, we got to change trails. They fired Joe Maddon. I said, I believe I had that. Nobody knows.
Except question.
People are listening now. And so they fired Maddon, who won the World, you know, he won the World Series with the Cubs. We have Wilbon on later. We'll ask Wilbon about it. But he's a heroic figure in Chicago.
Sure.
Nobody had won in 100 years. He won a World Series. He's a good manager.
Yeah, it was great.
He was really good with Tampa.
Yes.
Took Tampa to a World Series. They had no payroll. He's really good.
And they got off to a great start in Anaheim for this team this year.
If I owned the Washington Nationals and I knew that Davey Martinez sat at his side for a couple of years in the Chicago organization, I'd bring him in.
Why not?
Now, you can't because they're selling the team and they're not doing it. But if I were not selling the team, if I was looking to be competitive, I'd bring him in.
I don't know why people can't win with California. I mean, it's been forever.
Yeah.
And they have so much talent. You know, Trout, Ohtani.
Yeah, but Rendon gets hurt all the time.
Yeah.
And they started to address the pitching. Flip side of your point about the Angels, the Phillies can't lose.
Can't lose. Fire Joe Girardi, and they keep winning all the time.
Against Hader.
You know.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. Josh Hader, one of the great closers in the game.
Yeah.
And the Phillies can't lose. So all that took was getting anybody in there. They brought in Rob Thompson. They could have brought in, I don't know, who else is out there. You know, Rob anybody. Rob Dibble.
Rob Deer, yes.
Yeah, anybody named Rob. They could have done that. Don't you think?
Yeah. Because that team, again, is loaded. That was the frustration, was like, why? Are we, and you
They're
guys
better
were,
than that.
Yeah, they
are.
Right, you were just waiting for the offense to finally click.
Yeah.
I need to talk to Michael about this. The USGA, which runs the United States Open, declared yesterday, while they said their policy might change down the road because the CEO, Michael Wan, said this is a moving target. But for this year, they declared that anybody who was in the U.S. Open is eligible to play in the U.S. Open, regardless of whether they play on the Saudi Golf Tour, which starts tomorrow. No, Friday. Starts Friday in London.
Yeah, to do the time difference, yeah.
So this was an enormous victory for the Saudi Golf Tour. And by the way, for professional golfers. Because now, if they want, they can put their hands out and catch the money. If that's what they want to do. If that's what they choose to do. The PGA Tour, which I believe is a hollow shell, the PGA Tour had not wanted this to happen. The PGA Tour has been threatening to bar, as you heard Steve Sand say the other day, he thought they'd ban them for life. Ban all these guys who went to the LIV Tour, the Saudi Tour, for life. Like Kevin Na, like Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson and Kevin Na, they resigned from the PGA Tour. They said, who cares? We're taking the money. Phil Mickelson has not yet resigned, doesn't want to resign. But Michael, what is your read, short term at least, what this does for golf and what you think golfers will do as a result?
Well, I think the first thing is so many casual sports fans are confused as to who runs what when it comes to golf, because you just assume everything that is associated with men's professional golf that starts on this side of the pond is sort of run by the PGA Tour.
Oh, no, no,
and you
no.
don't necessarily realize the majors are their own entities. And in many ways, you look at the way the calendar has been shifted with the PGA moving to May, and now you have this condensed major calendar. As the PGA Tour tries to thwart this off, that condensed calendar sort of goes against them, because once these things start to run, they sort of are their own ground momentum here. So if you look at this, it's an open tournament. You go back to Tin Cup, and the dream of any driving
it's
range
open.
Pro qualifying, and you see golf's longest day on Monday, the stories of guys who stay around for one final qualifying spot or become the alternate. So for right now, those guys are able to play. If you have the qualifying record, if you have, say, the the past play to get in, you're allowed to play. But the wording of the USJ's announcement made it basically seem like they were trying to tee up a currently conforming golf ball high and let it fly as far away from them as possible and sort of hoping that this would figure its way out down the road. Right now, the biggest thing that's affecting players who are going to this other tour as they move away from right now, the beginning of June, is going to be world golf ranking points. Those are sort of the points that are going to get you
They'll
into,
lose them.
They will lose them because there's no real way to sort of quantify what
and these
points
are not, and the,
go to
and these Saudi
fields.
Tournaments are not four rounds. They're three rounds. So it's when you want to figure in, it's like if batting averages, you know, if it was a five-inning game, it would be a little bit different. You go, well, what is that a real game? Is that
and even if you could figure something out with that, you might look at strength of field and say, well, you're not playing necessarily against the best players in the
That's
world.
Right.
But for the right now, you look at it and go, okay, players like Phil Mickelson, because of his record, in the PGA last year, he's qualified for this US Open and the next upcoming, I think it's five Dustin
years.
Johnson as a past champion.
10.
That's a long time, and those are the two biggest names. So if you look at other players who are good enough to say still go through sectional qualifying, that's a big thing. Though they are still trying to say their lack of action right now does not mean that they're trying to show support to any of these other golf leagues.
It came up on the U.S. Open's watch. They thought about it. They knew for months that they were going to have to do something about this. And they, if it was up to them, they would pull the covers over their heads and they would do nothing at all. But it does seem to me that when something is called an open and you qualify, if I qualify for the U.S. Open and you tell me, oh, I don't think we can let you in because you played on this other tour last week, I would make a call to Abby Lowell in 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, get me injunctive relief. This is ridiculous. I qualified. I didn't kill anybody. I went somewhere else and I played golf for a week. I want to be in, and I would be in. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. The morality question that comes up, there are a lot of columnists who talk about the blood money that you take from Saudi Arabia, a repressive government, a government about which Phil Mickelson said, we know they killed, and it's Khashoggi, the columnist from the Washington Post, and we know they execute people for just being gay. These are Phil's words. And those are the famous words in the Shipnuck story.
They're scary MFers.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So you say to yourself, well, you shouldn't do business with them. Okay. And there may be a lot of golfers who don't want to be involved in a term that Michael taught me the other day, sports washing, in which a government like Saudi Arabia uses athletes to cleanse itself from all of these other charges. And some guys, and I can think of Rory McIlroy, might stand up and say, I don't want to be part of that. I don't want that money. But, and there's always a but, the United States government does business with Saudi Arabia. The government. The United States government does business with other repressive countries, such as China and Russia. The NBA is totally invested in China. To ask golfers to do something that the country doesn't even do strikes me as a hard ask. What do you think?
Yeah, that's sort of the Taylor Gooch position, because all these players sat for a Q&A, and they were asked hard questions. Graham McDowell did not come across in a favorable light.
No,
Taylor
he
Gooch
did
tried,
not.
Again, he just tried to stiff arm and go like, I'm not smart enough to be a politician. But again, if you look at the timing of this, particularly with inflation, with rising gas prices, with cost of living, and you look at what we might have to do in terms of trying to alleviate some of those stresses as we go into the midterms, it's gonna change the way we might look at some of those golfers.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a complicated issue. If you ask me right now who's winning, I'll tell you Greg Norman's winning by a lot.
Yeah.
But in 3 weeks, maybe he doesn't. I don't know.
Yeah, so here's the thing. The golf tour actually has to start, and you look at their team concept, which is a cool concept, and you see how fun that has been for the PGA Tour when they've done that team concept. The names and the logos that they've unveiled are ridiculous.
Are they? Really?
Yes. So it still shows you there is this threshold you have to jump over just to be a real-time sports league. It's not just throwing money on it. You've seen this as they're trying to figure out who's going to be calling the games, and they have the voice from soccer that some of us might know only from Ted Lasso. But you look at something that's, you can only find it on YouTube and their website.
So far.
So yes, so far.
So far.
So far.
You know, but we saw when
we got time.
Yes.
You know, and it doesn't matter what happens in the first one if by the second one they got
sure
more players and a worldwide television contract.
But if you become the laughing stock of the sporting world over the weekend, you're just going to have to continue to throw more money to try and dig your way out of it.
And that's right. And I'll give you as an example. Every once in a while, I land on Fox as they are televising the USFL.
Oh.
All games from the same site in Birmingham, Alabama. And when I say there's nobody in the stands, I'm not kidding.
There's nobody. Yeah.
They don't even want to show the stands. I don't know who's watching these games. That is totally propped up by television. But I don't know who's watching. I don't know how that can continue. There's nobody there.
Doesn't seem possible. I mean,
there's nobody there.
You're right. They don't want to do a wide shot of it because it's just empty seats.
Nobody there.
Well, for LIV Golf, they put out these ridiculous price tags for the tickets, and they got slammed for that. And now they've basically been given away. If you do like McDowell, code McDowell, you get tickets.
I don't think you have to have. I think in golf, I'm not certain you have to have people on the course as long as you have the product on the course.
Right.
I'm not certain.
You can get away with not having people. Think about the best moments when you walk, the crowds swell behind the winner of the Open, and they chase
British
after
Open.
Tiger. But if you don't have that, you need to have a very tight package.
Yeah. So, see how it goes. Michael Wilbon will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is a girl named Lucy Koplansky. Her music is sent to us by our friend Michael Granberry, the arts and feature writer of the Dallas Morning News, who sends us only great stuff.
It's amazing.
He writes that Lucy, as a teenager, moved from her native Chicago, Wilbon, lived in Chicago to Greenwich Village, where she met such aspiring fellow troubadours and friends as Sean Colvin and Suzanne Vega. Not too much later, she enrolled in Yeshiva University, intent on becoming a clinical psychologist. There she earned a doctorate, only to make her way back to what she really loves, which is music. She released the first of 9 solo albums, The Tide, in 1994. She's terrific. This is called Elmhurst, Queens, Mother's Day, and it plays in Michael Wilbon, Chicago's own. Before we get to anything about sports, how was Matthew's graduation? How was that?
It was great. It was great. You know, there's a small school, Woods Academy, Tony. I should know exactly how many kids. I mean, it's 30-some, maybe 40-something. And they eat, you know, Joe Powers is just a terrific head of the school. For graduation, as they come up to receive their diploma, he talks about each kid personally. Tells a story about each of the graduates. It was just charming. You know, I flew back on the red eye from San Francisco to get there. And, you know, I wasn't going to miss the graduation unless, you know, United Airlines, I never know whether they're going to come through or not between the actual flight and your luggage. You know, it's about a 40% equation with United. But I got back on the red eye and got to go to graduation, and we had a party at the house afterward, and off I went back to the finals. But it was you know, tremendous. So 14-year-olds and all the kids, you know them. You get to know them. You really do, because there's so few of them. You get to know them and their parents. And
so,
I went to a small. You know, I have 92 kids in my graduating class 50 years ago, but they got half that, less than half, about half that. So you really get to know everybody.
So does the headmaster just slip them a 10 when they get up there, just, you know, so that, for name, image, and likeness or anything like that? Who spoke? Did you speak? Did you speak at the graduation?
No. I can, between April 15 and June 15, I can barely get anywhere.
Okay.
So much less be counted on to do anything. And there was a recent graduate who spoke. It was people at school. Joe Powers, again, everybody in the community knows him. He's just a wonderful, wonderful
good.
All right. Teacher and head of a school. It's just Matthew's been a lifer. He started there in Montessori and went through eighth grade. It was just a wonderful experience. Wouldn't change it. Wouldn't trade it for the world.
Now he's going to Gonzaga, which is lovely. Let's go to sports.
Yeah.
Let's go to two things that interest me other than the NBA, because we'll get to the NBA, and they didn't play last night. And we all know what's going on. They're playing tonight. So let's get to some other things. One of the greatest managers in the history of Chicago Cubs, the only guy who took them to the World Series in 100 years, Joe Maddon, fired yesterday by the Angels. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's hard for me.
Yeah,
and I don't, the Angels, they don't resonate with me. I don't care about the Angels. But, when Joe went out there, you think, okay, he's going to have some resources. They got resources. He's going to have a primary player in Trout, and they acquire Rendon. I wasn't counting Pujols last year for these, before he left anyway. But, wow, what a mess the Angels are constantly. And Joe couldn't fix it. I mean, he ain't the only one that couldn't fix it. It's been 20 years since they've been any good. And so I feel for Joe Maddon. I mean, Joe's going to be known for one thing in baseball for the rest of his days, for the rest of his life. And that's winning in 2016 with the Cubs. That's it.
That's right.
I mean, nothing else. There's no encore to that. One of the things, Tony, I think I've told you is that I feel this way. And granted, I'm closer to the situation because I'm from Chicago, born and raised, followed these teams forever. But there are two singular teams that will be known for doing one thing. And I think it's all they could do. The 85 Bears, who many people think, I know they weren't undefeated like the Dolphins.
They may be the best team ever. The
greatest team.
Right? They may be. And yeah.
It's
they may be.
They did nothing else. They're known by 1 year, 85.
Right.
They got beat the next year after a 10-0 lead in the playoff game by the Redskins.
Right.
They got beat the very next year. They had the same personnel, because back then you could have the same personnel. Jim McMahon might have been hurt, but they had pretty much the same personnel. And then the 2016 Cubs, because they did the thing that was impossible, even harder than the Red Sox, 20 more years than the Red Sox had in 04 in terms of drought. So Joe Maddon did that. Joe Maddon, you could see Joe Maddon like in Chicago on his bike. You know, it's the smallest big city in America, Chicago is. And Joe could be out on a corner on Rush, you know, and you could, you know, sit and have a nice tea with him. I mean, you know, it's still the third biggest city in America, but it's not like the others. It's not as impersonal. It's very personal. And Joe Maddon's always going to be a hero there, always.
Yeah. You want to see him. You could see him taking Tony La Russa's spot, couldn't you?
No.
No? Okay.
No, not really, Tony. That's a good question, though. But La Russa is tied in for decades with the Reinsdorfs and the
White but he's Sox. 78 years old. He's not going to do it forever.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. I hadn't thought about it. You know what? I have to ask about that. I know the people, as you know, to actually ask about that.
That's right. That's right.
But and the White Sox are underachievers. They just are.
I'm not saying to fire Tony La Russa. I'm saying together. Yeah, that's
they all. They're underachievers, so. The White Sox, to me, could be the most. We could make the case. While I was talking to one of the baseball scribes, that the White Sox are the biggest underachiever in baseball right now.
Well, that's possible. All right, let me move to something else. And I know this is very marginal in your life, but there's a greater ramification here. The Olympics are going to declare. They have declared that you cannot skate in the Olympics if you're under 17 years old. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to say, well, that's great because you don't want pressures on these 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds.
Yeah.
But Oksana Baiul won a gold medal at 16 years old. She was ready to go. You know how I feel about going to the NBA. If you're 14 and you're ready to go, that's your choice. I think you and I differ on this. I don't like this rule.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the age limit rules. I just am. Especially now that I'm the parent of a 14-year-old.
Uh-huh.
No, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. I mean, everybody doesn't get to do everything. It's not your inalienable right to compete at 12 years old, because they're just going to go subterranean. People are going to get to the point where somebody's 13. No, 17. Oksana Baiul wouldn't have competed if I was the czar of skating. And gymnastics was the same way, and they put a limit in. They put a limit in. They need to, Tony. It's not even about the performance at the Olympics or the performance at the event we're talking about. It's the culture of these things that put the pressure on people at 12 and 13 and 14. Now, what kind of environment are they in, and where are they left by their parents to practice for 10 hours a day? No, enough.
Okay. All right.
Not only am I not for it, I am angrily increasingly for the limit.
Okay. So we're on opposite sides on that.
Yeah,
we're on opposite sides on that. Your thoughts now, as the U.S. Open said to the PGA Tour, stick it. We're not doing it your way. We're not with you. We're going to allow people who have qualified for our tournament, democratically qualified by going out there and shooting a score, we're going to let them play regardless of where they play the week before. What do you think this does to the PGA Tour short-term, long-term? What do you think it does with the Saudis short-term, long-term?
I don't think it does anything long-term because the PGA seems to have its hackles up and they want to flex and they're going to lose in court, period. They're going to lose.
Yes, they are.
And the restraint of trade, they're going to lose. And the arrogance of it is just sort of NFL-like. You know, it really is. And I don't expect to stand it to withstand any legal, real serious legal test. And I don't know what it does. So short term to me doesn't matter because the moment somebody challenges legally, the moment somebody walks in and says, "Here's my lawyer, have a chat," it's going to be done. So, you know, case by case, you could probably do with an event like the Masters. It's an invitational.
Now that's different.
You know,
the Masters can do what it wants.
Yeah. Oh, the word open.
Open. That's right. That's right.
It changes it. And the Open, you know, I don't think that the Open, you know, the British Open won't care about this. Most people are going to be from Europe anyway, it seems, on the Saudi tour.
I agree.
I just think, you know, this is a 10% teapot for right now. And I just find it funny that golf, which, you know, in which in this country, its history is rooted in exclusionary practices.
100%.
100%. Like, really? Yeah. No, we're doing that now.
100% on that. I mean, I could see this if the Saudis money. They don't care. They don't care, Mike. If you want to announce the LIV Tour, they'll give you $300 million. They don't care.
That's right. You and I should be. You know, you and I should have looked into that. Tony, I'm going to. First of all, who's televising?
Somebody will now. I would think Fox would.
In 3 minutes.
Well, I don't mean this particular tournament. Well, did Greg Norman leave Fox on bad terms or good terms? Because if he left on good terms, Fox would be the one to do it. But I don't know. I don't know happened there.
I guess it could be, especially the international situation. Sure. You know, it's got to be, Sky TV, right? I mean, don't they have to be somehow?
I mean, Rupert Murdoch is from another place and understands global television.
Yeah.
He does.
And understands revenue stream.
Yeah.
As well as anybody.
He gets
better than most.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Absolutely, Tom.
All right. By the way, I got another thing, too. We may be on different sides on this one.
What's that?
I am against positionless all-star teams for the NBA. I am against that. Are you for it?
Well, I think there's a middle ground. I don't like the position stuff because it's a positionless game now. Don't tell me I can't have Embiid and Joker and Giannis on the same team. I don't want to hear that. That's lazy. And so even if I'm not for positionless, I'm for front court, back court, maybe. But then where did Luka Doncic go?
Back court.
I mean, seriously, just specific okay, I mean,
He's got the ball in his hands 80% of the time on that team. Backcourt. It's not just size for me.
Okay, even if I give it's a complex issue. Where does Giannis go? He's got the ball 80% of the time, but we're not going to argue he's a guard.
He's front court, right? Yeah.
He's front court. So if we did front court, back court, Tony, and there was a move to do that because I voted on these things. I voted on these things, and so I'm okay for front court, back court. But pretty soon, positionless. Look, you know, I'm not even for seeding by conference anymore. Just seed them. Seed the best teams. Have the best teams play. Now, it's working out this year. It's fine because the East is good again. And you can field a team. You know, I'm not even for West versus East in the All-Star game. I'm for U.S. versus the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Give me something that
it's
would
an exhibition.
Inspire some
That's
competition.
Fine. Yeah, I don't care. I'm okay. They can do whatever they want with that. All right, get you out of here on this because I know you got to go to Boston. Your position is that Boston has the advantage right now. We'll see what happens in game three. But do you expect Boston to win game three?
Tonight, yes. I expect them to win tonight. And that probably, okay. We'll see what happens if everybody comes out healthy. I probably expect Golden State to win game four.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll be 2-2, ensuring a six-game series, ensuring we go back to Oakland, which we're going to do anyway, not Oakland anymore, San Francisco. We go to San Francisco for Monday's game five. So that's I'm expecting a long series, Tone.
Okay.
And I'm expecting, you know, all the angst about Klay Thompson to be a waste of time. Klay Thompson will come out and be Klay Thompson tonight after a couple of rough games. You have rough games in the playoffs because the other teams are trying hard. So even Hall of Famers have rough games. And so I expect Klay Thompson to be something closer to the Klay we're used to tonight. But I still expect Boston to win.
By the way, people who don't watch don't know this. We had Mark Messier on the show yesterday. Mark Messier has 6 Stanley Cups. Mark Messier is a godlike player. What did you think? Were you? I was a little starstruck. I have to admit, having him on the show. How about you?
Yes. And the funny thing is, I'm not starstruck by Gretzky anymore because I see him so often.
Right.
I've gotten to know him. I play golf with him. You know, Yeah, Messier, man, the captain. Come on.
Yeah.
I mean, he went 6.
Yeah.
He's got, 2 more than Gretzky?
Yes. One in Edmonton and one in New York. He's got 6. If you take the Montreal Canadiens' great dynasty in the 40s, 50s, and 60s out of this, if you go to the last 40 years.
50.
Who's got more than 6?
I mean, you got to go after Lafleur. You got to go and Dryden. And you got to go Messier.
That's 6.
You
6 is
great.
A lot.
He's imposing looking at this age.
Yeah.
It's so cool to have had him.
Yeah. And he didn't do that thing like your boy Urlacher getting new hair. He didn't do that.
No, man. He stayed true to the brotherhood. I like
All right.
I liked him a lot.
I'll talk to you later. Have a good time.
All right, Tom. Thanks.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls. We will come back. Jason LaConfora will join us when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
Once again, this is Lucy Kaplansky, who says, I came to New York to sing, to be a folk singer. This is Michael Granberry saying what she once told him. It was going really well. When I was 21, I had a really nice write-up in the New York Times, and then I decided to quit, although at the time, I didn't want to be a singer. I wanted to be a therapist. And with the help of her own really good therapist, she made her way back. I'd been too unconsciously conflicted to let myself have what I wanted, she says. And once I was able to see that was what I wanted, I couldn't turn back. The New Yorker once described Lucy as a truly gifted performer with a bag full of enchanting songs. I also like the description in the Boston Globe, which once wrote, Lucy Kaplansky is becoming the troubadour laureate of modern city folk. This is a song called 10 Years Night. She's great. I mean, who's kidding who? She's great.
Terrific.
Michael, if people like Lucy Kaplansky or their good friends like Michael Granberry want to send in their music, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
You know, somebody should send me her albums. She's really good. Jason LaConfora joins us now. We haven't talked about football in a while. We're going to talk about football. And I just, before I get to the question I want to get to on Deshaun Watson, which to me is the overriding issue in football at the moment. The impetus for this is OTAs are starting and minicamps and all that other stuff. And I just saw it today, Jason. I'll ask you to comment on this. Aaron Rodgers has said publicly that he definitely will play his entire career with the Green Bay Packers. I've got to tell you, I like Aaron Rodgers personally. I'm so sick of Aaron Rodgers at this point. Are you? I'm so sick of him.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to be over him a little bit at this point. Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know what that declarative statement means, Tone. Like, he's been a guy who's been saying, I'm got one foot out the door for a while. Then he gets $103 million fully guaranteed just in the next 2 years with the chance to continue to make about $50 a year after that for another year if he so chooses on rolling guarantees. So, yeah, it's good to know that he's quasi-committed to basically finishing his career with Green Bay. Like, that's wonderful news.
It's Aaron Rodgers who started this whole thing.
Yes.
It's Aaron Rodgers responsible for all of this. And now Aaron Rodgers is, I'm going to definitely stay here. And I can even feel him looking at people who ask that, like, what are you, stupid? Of course I'm going to stay here. And you go, whoa, Aaron, you did this.
Yeah.
We didn't do this, right? Am I right?
Yeah, you can kind of feel the side-eye glance or the... this guy is... He's got multiple black belts in the passive aggressive arts. He has taken that whole mind games thing to another level. He clearly revels in it.
Yeah.
It clearly is a part of sort of his, like, I think certain guys kind of enjoy certain things to kind of lube themselves up for a season or get themselves through a season, right? Ben Roethlisberger was always mythologizing injuries, fake or real.
Yes.
And sort of basking in the whole, it will he, won't he, how bad is it? Like that stuff, that whole the chatter about what's next for Ben, I think always drove him. And I think this guy's got certainly some stuff going on with him where he wants to act like he is above the fray.
Oh, yes.
And he wants to act like none of this whole, like, the idea that people talk about me or hang on what I say, like, I'm just naive to all that. Yet at the same time, he completely revels in it. He completely is an unbelievable content generator for the sort of industrial sports media complex.
You're 100% right. He's a manipulator. And I played golf with him. I like him.
Yeah.
I like him, but shut up with this, right?
It's a lot to... Yeah, it's a lot to take in on a quasi-regular basis. Yes.
All right, we're done
less
with
would
story.
Be more with him right about now.
So let me get to Deshaun Watson. More people are coming out and saying that Deshaun Watson did this to them as well. Everybody knows what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
If these things are true, now maybe none of them are true. Maybe none of them are true. Maybe. But if they are true, and there's now 22 women lined up to testify, I guess. If they are true, then at the very least, Deshaun Watson believes that female massage therapists are prostitutes. At the very least. What, the league, I don't know if they can wait on verdicts. I don't know how this is going to work. Doesn't the league have to have a policy on Deshaun Watson? And if it does, Jason, what do you think it will be?
Well, this is a situation where because of his sort of distorted behavior, his seeking out and pursuit of, we now have the New York Times saying 66 different individuals in the span of less than a year and a half, most of them without a significant massage background, right? Many of them just getting into it, just getting certified. His pursuit of them through unusual means like Instagram, direct messages, what have you. There's something off with him. There's serious behavioral issues here. I spoke a lot about the time of this trade and how I found it revolting that these teams are talking about. And it wasn't just the Browns. The Browns are just the one who threw the right numbers in front of them. to get him to look back at them. But these teams who, you know, an hour conversation or 90 minutes on Zoom or, you know, an hour with the owner acting as if they had done any sort of real research or digging down into his psyche, what makes him tick, where is this coming from? You know, even if you just sort of take the sexual aspect out of it, like, is he seeking these power imbalance relationships? Is there something that happened to him in his past that would lead him to do this? Was he trying to get caught at a certain point? Was this some sort of cry for help? Like that, the whole sort of medical component to this, mental health component to this, I just think has kind of been ignored or glossed over, or these teams just they wanted to know what they knew and they didn't want to know what they didn't want to know. But regardless, because of that behavior, he has put himself in a situation where there have been so many of these encounters. And, you know, that just the sheer volume and the nature of this being a situation where there is no third party who could speak to this or that, right? In almost all these cases, it's two individuals in
a
room.
That's right.
Like, of course it's not going to stop. And different people respond to these things in different ways. And some people want to come forward, you know, and immediately. And some people never want to come forward. And the idea, though, that there is now a sort of cohort of women who are amplifying and confirming these behavioral patterns, Tony, without seeking any recourse criminally. They're not coming after his money. They're not coming after his paycheck. They're not saying he should never play in the NFL again. They're just saying, I had to add my voice to this in some way, shape, or form because I experienced it as well. It is not right. And in some cases, they're saying it absolutely was against the law. And we hope there's some degree of recourse here. So, yeah, it's alarming, it's troubling, it's disgusting, and the NFL's personal conduct policy is written in a way that the commissioner and these other parties who now are involved in sort of informing league decisions on things like this have a tremendous amount of latitude and don't need to have evidence near the threshold of what you would need for, you know, for a court of law you know, for even the civil procedures. So can they just suspend him indefinitely as more information is come to light? Do they decide that in lieu of making a declarative statement about his, you know, the outcome of this, we're just going to put him on the commissioner's exempt list?
We're going to put him on ice, what baseball did with Trevor Bauer.
And we'll get back to it when we get back to it.
When we choose to, yeah.
As the information comes to light that informs our decision. I mean, look, we know we've seen the league do a lot of things over the years where they can sort of make the rules up as it goes along, and they are not beholden to any precedent. So, yeah, if the Cleveland Browns were to come to find out that it's more likely than not that he plays no football for you this year, that's how it goes.
So
they knew what they were risking by giving up what they gave up and structuring this the way they structured it at a time when there was no clarity about his future regarding the NFL.
So let's just play this thing out. I can't imagine, Jason. I honestly can't imagine Roger Goodell allowing him to play from day one this year. I don't care that he missed all last year.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that he's going to start the season.
No,
and it leads to two questions. And one is a football question and one is not. The first question is, these people who own the Cleveland Browns, who have shown for years their incompetence as owners, how is this playing in Cleveland, in the city of Cleveland? What is the reaction to signing Deshaun Watson? And two, and this is the football part, Baker Mayfield is under contract to them. He has been their starting quarterback for a few years. He hates their guts and they don't like him. What happens to him if they don't have Deshaun Watson? And again, Jason, maybe I'm wrong. I can't imagine they're going to have Deshaun Watson at the beginning of the season.
No, they're not. They're not going to have Deshaun Watson at the beginning of the season. There's no doubt about that. There seems to be a mounting backlash in Cleveland and elsewhere, as more people, I think, become aware of the exact nature of these claims and allegations and charges. And not everybody's going to sit there and weed through, this legal document or that legal document. But if you've just sort of read some of the reporting that's been going on, and again, the New York Times has a tremendous piece,
big piece today.
Jenny Ventress wrote yesterday, and you see how sort of callous his responses, Deshaun Watson's responses to some of these questions have been when he has been deposed, and you compare that to the way these women are telling their stories. I think in the court of public opinion that the pendulum continues to swing before, why do we need this guy running out onto a field, being celebrated, you know what I mean, being mic'd up during games, representing the NFL, representing the city of Cleveland, where he's never spent a damn minute anyway, because most of the time he's back in Houston, because he's constantly being deposed, because he has 23 civil allegations against him of sexual misconduct, or in some cases allegations of straight-out criminal sexual activity. Yeah, I don't think it's playing real well there. And you're right to bring up the Haslams, because this absolutely positively only happens in Cleveland with that contract. And all of the parameters that went into making this happen, because the owners desperately, badly wanted it. If they weren't 1,000,000% on board, I got news for you. There is no salesman in the world, there is no general manager or team president or coach who would have the persuasive powers to talk them into it. You don't get talked into something like this when you're the one setting that precedent and putting $200 million in escrow and giving him $230 million fully guaranteed.
Unbelievable.
And structuring year one in the way it's structured. So, even if it turns out he was a pretty despicable guy, he's not going to pay any financial ramifications from it. It's only going to lose $1 million, even if he doesn't play all year. That only happens because the owners are fully on board with it, and they keep going to their football people saying, okay, well, he still doesn't want us. What else could we do to sweeten the pot? What if we did this? What if we did that? But they don't speak to it at all. Kevin Stefanski, the coach, has to wear this week in, week out as new things come to light. And that's I'm not saying anybody should feel sorry for Kevin Stefanski either, but let's just be real about who the face of this transaction is. It's D and Jimmy Haslam 8 days a week, 25 hours a day, all day long, all week long, all season long, forever.
Yes. All right. Baker Mayfield circumstance.
Oh, and yeah, there's
what
stuff
happens?
With that. I mean, it's the same.
What's that?
It's the same as it ever was. Like, you know, they've got a payroll now committed to be, you know, I think close to $270 million in a league with an alleged salary cap of 208. So they're all in financially. None of their partners, I'm using air quotes as the fellow owners like to call each other, are interested in taking helping him out in any way or ridding him of this problem unless he agrees to rid most of it himself, which is I'm gonna absorb the bulk of this contract and then I'll get something in return for this kid. And if it turns out he starts 75% of your games or plays X amount of your snaps, then I'll get something else on top of it. That's the only way to facilitate this right now. There isn't an active market, I think, and a lot of people in the league think Seattle makes the most sense. But Seattle's in, again, no hurry to facilitate this. And so it sits. And, you know, at some point, he's going to not want to be answering, have his people answer questions about Baker Mayfield anymore. And he's going to not want Baker Mayfield to be on his books at $19 million, not to play, but maybe can, you know, is willing to eat 10 or 12 of that to get him out of there and get something for him. And then it'll happen. And until then, you know, they won't want him around and he won't want to be around, and we'll keep doing this kabuki dance.
Fantastic. I don't normally just have you talk about one thing, but I'm fascinated by it and I appreciate your time on it.
Bizarre situation.
Plug your radio show for us.
Thank you, Tone. You could listen to me from 2 to 6 weekdays on Inside Access, The Fan, on 105.7, The Fan in Baltimore. You can listen to the Odyssey app if you are out of market, or www.1057thefan.com. A lot of football, a lot of Ravens, a lot of Orioles. We like to make fun of the Nats these days. And we will have former Terps coach Ralph Friedgen on with us at 5 o'clock on this particular Wednesday as he is up for induction into the College Football Hall of Fame. And everybody loves Fridge.
Yes.
So, yeah, please tune in, and thank you for having me, my friends.
By the way, Aiden last night gave up like 10 runs. He's 1-10 on the year. It's 1-10.
Did they bother to catch the ball in the outfield last night? I must admit, I was watching the Orioles more closely than them. But it's fun. Like the 3 days a week, they just decide that fly balls are optional. I like that. I'm very down with that.
Thank you, Jason. Jason Rockin for our boys and girls. We will take a break. We will come back with email and jingle. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony's mailbag. Got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag. Gonna read some for all of you.
Kirsten Onstadt, thank you so very, very much. Nigel, you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, thank you. Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You will as well. We got the bagel sandwiches today. You just need to go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in, and you'll be thrilled.
That's almost it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say the highway's jammed with broken heroes on a last-chance power drive. Everybody's out on the run tonight, but there's no place left to hide. Together, Wendy, we can live with the sadness. I love you with all of the madness in my soul. That's Bruce Springsteen. Mr. Springsteen. Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon, Jason Lockenfora. Thanks to today's sponsors, Sunday Indochino, Simply Safe. You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. If you get the show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. I need to say this about all of the emails we get. We get a lot of emails. I've got a backlog of hundreds of emails from years already. Let's just say 60 come in a day, and let's just say Nigel picks 40 and gives me 40, and then I read 20. I mean, we're so grateful for the emails, but they all don't get read.
Yes.
It's simple. They all don't get
read.
But
it's a reminder that even emails that feel great in the moment sometimes have to eventually reach the cutting floor.
Yeah, yeah. Shelf life, yeah.
Daryl in Olney, Maryland, I'd ask you how you're doing, but I know two things. You don't know how to get to your email to read this, and two, I'm not sure you can be banned for life from a podcast. This Sunday, I flew from Baltimore to Denver. As I sat in the aisle seat, I looked over at the guy next to me in the middle seat. I didn't recognize the mid-20s gentleman with the big headphones, so I asked his name. Steve, he replied. I asked, are you famous? What? Steve replied. I'm trying to meet someone famous on this flight so I can email the bald orange man who hosts a podcast from his uncle's dining room table that he has out of spite. Steve looked at me, put his headphones back on. We haven't talked since. From Gary Mendez, I've lived a lot of places in my life. I spent about 15 years in Maryland. I've never been seated next to a celebrity on a plane. I've crossed paths with many a celebrity athlete in my day, and a surprising number of them have happened at Camden Yards. I've bumped into everyone from Pat Sajak to George Murison to Frank Robinson at Oriole Park. But the best experience was when I scored some great seats just behind the O's dugout for an April game, 2002. Being named Gary, you can imagine my surprise when, as I walked to my seat, people started turning and looking and saying things like, "Great job, Gary," and "Way to go, Gary." This continued into the game. It took me until about the third inning to realize why people seemed to be looking over my head as they made their congratulatory remarks. I turned around and spot University of Maryland basketball coach Gary Williams, who was fresh off an NCAA tournament championship just weeks earlier, sitting two rows behind me. Later in the game, as I went off to the bathroom, I spotted Coach Williams out on the concourse, lighting a cigar, and I stopped and I said, "Sorry to bother you, Coach. I just want to say my name is Gary and I'm sitting in front of you, so I thought people were talking to me the whole game." He patted me on the back and said, "Don't sell yourself short, Gary. You're doing a great job, too." It's great. Coach, if you're out there listening, thank you for the pep talk. From Brandon Costello, who used to be Brandon Boker.
Yes.
Now he's Brandon Costello. I was on a plane once with the band Stillwater, sitting across from guitarist Russell Hammond. We don't even have to go through this. It's a funny reference.
It is.
Come on, from Almost Famous. It's funny. Who's this from? Ronnie Newmark.
Yes.
We did the Beatles tribute with Tom Lofgren last Friday night at Jam and Java. While using the men's room, I didn't notice any celebs waiting to shake hands nearby, but I did spot a This Show Stinks sticker on the wall, photo attached. It stood out among the stickers of the countless bands that have played there and left their mark, as it were. Next Saturday, June 11th, and that's this Saturday,
yes,
right? June 11th.
Yep.
If you're in Rehoboth, my 9-piece Motown band, Soul Crackers, will be appearing on the Rehoboth Beach Bandstand. That's right in the middle of town.
Yeah.
That's right by the water. You drive all the way down on Rehoboth Avenue till you can't drive anymore, and that's where the bandstand is.
That's fantastic.
That's great.
Don't expect to find parking.
No. No, they can't park there. It's the Rehoboth Beach Bandstand from 8 o'clock to 9:15. It's a free outdoor show. You're all on the guest list. That's fabulous. Let's hope it's a nice night. And, you know, and they do well. And, yeah, This Show Stinks is on the wall. That's great. That's great. And those are the Soul Crackers. That's good. Teresa Krant. Didn't we talk about Teresa Krant? Boy, was I shocked while putting a load of clothes in the washer to hear about the knitted leg warmer you received in the mail. Mr. Tony, I'm a little and I'm thrilled that my sweater for the Blue Fairy Penguin, the one that says Penguin Parade Australia across the chest, that usually sits on the PTI set, made it to you. I hope Bonnie can put it on the penguin and that it fits. I made that sweater in honor of Pengy's 11th anniversary on your PTI set. But more importantly, to thank you and Mr. Wilbon for your wonderful show that has meant so much to me and my family. Congratulations on your 20th anniversary. Michael, I know this was the first sweater I ever knitted, but you called it a leg warmer. Please know that if I had knitted a leg warmer, I would have knitted two, because that's how they usually come in pairs. Please send me your calf size and favorite color, because now I feel compelled to learn and knit you a pair of leg warmers. Tony, thanks to you and the crew for the great podcast. I listen to it during the day, and then at night I listen over headphones to fall asleep. Your delivery and soothing voice, nobody's ever said that to me, quiets the ringing in my ears and lets me have a peaceful night's sleep. I'm very thankful to Teresa Krant. Isn't that lovely?
That is nice.
From Michael Wilson in Framingham, Massachusetts. Sean Colella is my cousin, who I'll see this weekend in Saratoga from my aunt's and his grandmother's 80th birthday party. I'll be sure to relay the message of his upcoming NIL deal and exciting changes to equipment for next golf season. That's the kid from Binghamton.
That's, yes.
I'm not sponsoring that kid. Oh, well, maybe I'll throw him a 10. You know what? I
10 spots, sure.
Really sponsor. Greg Wells, who signs at Dr. Comcast, Why I'm Missing Pennsylvania. Listened to a few shows on Friday, heard of your cell phone issues. Can't help but notice that the two folks from AT&T went ahead and blamed Comcast. Sure, the cell service that we have nothing to do with doesn't work. That's on us. I'll just call out that if you had our cell service, you'd have no issues as it automatically connects to our internet. Sounds like Michael got it working, but if it falters again, I'm sure we could accommodate a service transfer. I'll add that whomever you were discussing this Wi-Fi issue with got almost everything wrong. Happy to field questions if I can help. Thank you for being a great customer. This goes in the save bag.
Yes, we'll save that one.
Scott Feist in New Baden, Illinois. How we explain how a phone computer works to a novice, you, by an IT system administrator, me. One, turn the device on. Two, the magic happens. You're welcome. From Lee Gordon, LG, West Hartford, Connecticut, and Boynton Beach, Florida. Dr. Tony, 4G, 5G, you don't need that. You got DG. We haven't heard from DG in a while.
It's been a bit, yeah.
From Claire Natola. Several years ago, the legendary Jen Babish showed me the setting on my iPhone that allows me to use Wi-Fi for phone calls. It's a damn good thing she did, because I have since moved to a godforsaken part of northern New England where I have no cellular coverage. Jen Babish. She's good for more than just helping you pick out a new washer dryer. Signed, Claire Natola, middle of nowhere, Vermont. P.S. Have Michael do these steps on your phone. Setting cellular Wi-Fi calling on this phone, turn this on. That's what you did.
Yep.
You know, so thank you for that. And one more from Shad. It's about Max Scherzer's dog. Sit, stay, roll over, and remember, do not bite the hand that feeds you. If you're out on your bike time, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Come on now. That means everybody just cool out. Will
you
cool out, everybody?
Sun is coming up over the bay. Everywhere, everything is changed. Only sound is wind in the trees. New York City's far from me. The sun is coming up over the bay. Friends back home tell me nothing is the same. That city symphony just stopped that day. The crowd's life, the energy, are just sirens now through empty streets. My silence turning city far away. These days there is no work for me. I don't know if there will ever be. As remote lives keep moving on, I sit down to write this song in this refuge from that storm far away. It's far away, far from me, far away from. Then I read about a nurse's day in Queens. In cotton scrubs, she is the infantry. Trenches painted in fluorescent light, weaponless soldiers in the fight. I read about a nurse's day in Queens. She's wearing the only mask that she can find. She knows that they will all get sick in time. She's telling the writer all the things they need, with the president lying on TV. Her oath was not for her family to die. Endless lines of those who won't be saved, dying in plastic chairs as they wait. She gets home, won't hug her kids, writes her will like her friends all did. Falls asleep in her living room chair again. It's far away, far from me, far away from me. Making dinner, sun is going down. Sun will be setting over New York town. They'll be cheering soon on my empty street, a brief reprise of that symphony. In the city where I became a wife, where my mother was born, where I've made my life. And though I won't be there to cheer along, oh, I can sing this song. That nurse, and for my city, my home.
The only sound is wind that sounds like cars that sound like breathing. The desert air is hot and dry. Two lanes weaving earth and sky. The stars are all that's keeping time till morning. And I turn and look beside me, and you're sleeping like a baby, and you haven't heard a word that I've been saying. Fast asleep in the dashboard light. Well, I can't speak. That's how I feel. Open your eyes and look at me. And look at me. Open your eyes. Look at me.
'cause I haven't hold this love from you before this 10-year night is through. I'm telling you, take it from me, take it from me. Older, I know we are, than the night we met in that downtown bar. You thought I was some kind of star, that's what you said. I felt your skin, felt the heat as you pulled me out into the street. And you kissed me there till I was weak, 'cause I asked you to. Later on your kitchen floor, two flights above the grocery store, I felt things I never felt before.